And welcome to the local news roundup on The Point here on WCAI. I'm Sean Corcoran, news director here at the station. We're going to discuss the top local and regional news stories of the week with some of the area's leading journalists. And with me in the studio is Jeff Spillane of the Cape Cod Times. Good morning, Jeff.
Hey, good morning, Sean.
Good morning. Also joining us later will be Sarah Brown of the Martha's Vineyard Gazette, Tim Wood of the Cape Cod Chronicle, Ed Miller of the Provincetown Banner, and Nelson Siegelman of the Martha's Vineyard Times. Lots of interesting stories to talk about. Let's start with the continuing story of the Barnstable County Fire and Rescue Training Academy, which is about a 6.2 acre property where firefighters have gone to train for quite a long time. But some of that training now is coming back to bite us.
Yeah, that's right, Sean. This fire training academy has been in operation for decades. And over the course of the years when it was used as a training academy, well, it still is, up until 2009, a firefighting foam was used on a regular basis there that was later found to contain perfluorinated compounds, which are now designated by the EPA as contaminants of emerging concern. They are regulated. Not sure exactly they're still in a state of being defined, so to speak. Mm. But nonetheless, they have caused some issues over in Hyannis. Some of these chemicals have seeped into the wells serving the Hyannis water system. There has been some health advisory warnings in the past, this past summer. And now the DEP, the Massachusetts Department of Environmental Protection, in August sent a letter to the county saying, you are responsible. You need to start cleaning this up. And that letter was sent to them on August 4th, and they said, we need an immediate response by September 15th. County did not make that deadline given the complexity of the issue, but they came close. They submitted it this week on September 27th. And it looks as if the plan could be approved as soon as next week. They are really moving this along because it is so important. There's a hot spot at the County Fire Academy. I was out there about 2 weeks ago. That would, in one about 400 square foot area, the amount of this chemical is 3,000 times what it should be for health advisory guidelines. So the plan here is, once they have DE approval, is to start excavating the soil about 10 to 12 feet deep at the Fire Academy, which I should also say this particular hotspot is very close, borders a pond called Flint Rock Pond. So that is being affected as well. They want to excavate the soil and truck it to a lined landfill facility in Taunton. The other component of the initial cleanup that the DEP would like them to take care of as soon as possible is also expanding the filtering system they have right now, taking the groundwater and pumping it out and treating it. So this is a good step in the right direction. Hopefully it will be a good start and help to start cleaning up the property, which has become an issue for the county, which, by the way, is cash-strapped. And this initial phase is going to cost about $250,000.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That does, I would think it would be higher. That's this first initial phase.
It's the first initial phase. And the County Assembly of Delegates, the county commissioners, did approve the expenditure, but it is coming out of existing accounts at the county. So in speaking with Jack Units, the county administrator, a few weeks back, he said this is likely moving this money to a cleanup account will likely affect some groups within the county, perhaps employees as well.
Hmm. You said they stopped using the foam in 2009. I thought mm-hmm. there was some reporting that people had actually seen foam on the site within the past few years.
Yeah, last October, which brings up another question. Who is watching over the academy? And there is a lot more oversight now, but there has been reports that there has been found over there again. That caused a major controversy last fall, and now they are keeping a very close eye. Someone was telling me that the foam, and this was actually a fire chief, I should say, the foam is very expensive.
Okay.
And it has a long shelf life. So there are likely fire departments who would use the academy who probably still have that foam.
Oh.
And it would still be usable. But they are now really taking a closer look at that for people who are using the academy not to use that. And in speaking about the $250,000 for the initial cleanup, that could be a drop in the bucket compared to what the town of Barnstable wants from the county. In July, the town of Barnstable did file a lawsuit against the county looking for at least $2 million to remediate the property, as well as to be reimbursed for steps the town has taken to clean the wells for the Hyannis water supply.
Interesting that it's already come to a lawsuit, and that the county and haven't been able to get this together.
They have not, and there's also concerns that the county is now saying, "Hey, Barnstable, we're going to do our part to clean this up, but you also have an airport on the other side of the fire training academy." Airports are known to use de-icing fluids. They're used to use firefighting foams as well. So I think what we're going to see in the coming weeks is maybe, are you partly responsible for this as well? So I think that's some of the discussion that's going on behind the scenes right now.
Okay. Let's talk about the NOAA shelter. That's the emergency shelter in Hyannis that has been in the news quite a bit over the past year as talk has kind of gone around about moving it out of Hyannis, because there's been some kind of pushback from businesses for quite a long time and people concerned about the tourist industry who don't want to see so many homeless people in Hyannis.
That's right. The NOAA shelter, which is on Winter Street in Hyannis, for those of you who aren't familiar with downtown Hyannis, it's about a block from the business district, accommodates roughly about 55 people a night, typically at full capacity. But the clients of the NOAA shelter do leave there about 8 o'clock in the morning, cannot return until 4:30, which leaves these folks to really hang out downtown, which has been affecting business. It's led to some letters sent to the editor from tourists who said, gosh, what is happening with Hyannis? So there have been two particular groups in Hyannis working on a solution to possibly move the shelter away from the downtown area. And not only just move it, but make it more of a rehabilitative center. Right now, NOAA being an emergency shelter, it's a place to go and lay your head at night. You leave, you come back at 4:30. And what this particular group, there's one group that's comprised of about 5 town councilors. It's a town group, as well as a group of business and civic leaders who have said, yes, we need the shelter, but let's have more transitional and rehabilitative services. Let's help people who are using the shelter gain job skills, become employed, and help them find housing. So it would be more of a facility that would be more of a rehabilitative in nature. So that has been going on for about a year. The folks that operate NOAA, that's Housing Assistance Corporation, have been working with these two groups on this particular plan. Of course, finding a location is difficult.
Right.
So as of last week, we found out that NOAA is now going to hand over management of the shelter to the Catholic Social Services of the Diocese of Fall River. That is a group that runs shelters currently in New Bedford and Taunton. And a spokesman for the diocese last week told us that really right now they have no intention of moving the shelter. You would think that may upset some people who are working on the move. It really hasn't. Speaking with Jennifer Cullum, a Barnstable town councilor who's leading the charge on the town side, she said this actually may be a good thing, a stopgap measure, because even if we did have a location to move the shelter, it could take years. And she's saying this is an organization that has deep pockets, the Catholic Church, the Diocese of Fall River. They know what they're doing. It's well-managed. They have run shelters, and they are more along the lines of that whole thought of rehabilitating the clients as opposed to just giving them a place to sleep. And she said maybe better management could be what we need right now for the shelter.
Meanwhile, what would Housing Assistance Corporation would focus on their other endeavors?
Yes, they would rather focus, and in speaking with Rick Presbury, who is the founder and CEO of Housing Assistance Corporation, they want to focus on what their primary vision is, and that's finding permanent and affordable housing for people on the Cape. They would still run some shelters on the Cape, but not an emergency shelter.
Right. They run several shelters, right. Some for women and such.
Exactly.
Let's go to the phone, where Sarah Brown is joining us from the Martha's Vineyard Gazette newsroom. Hello, Sarah.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. You in the paper this week, there's coverage of this appeal from some Woods Hole residents. They're a little upset about some of the efforts by the Steamship Authority to make changes in Woods Hole. What's this about?
Yeah, so for the last 2 years or so, the Steamship Authority has been working on a pretty big renovation of the Woods Hole Terminal. I think it's about a $60 million project, and it includes, you know, completely rebuilding the main terminal there, rebuilding and realigning the ferry slips, and relocating the administrative offices that are now at that terminal to Palmer Avenue in Falmouth. So pretty big project that was scheduled to get underway, I believe, this winter and take about 3 years to complete. And the state DEP had issued a preliminary license for the project earlier this month. As you said, a group of 13 Woods Hole residents have requested a hearing before the DEP, which kind of starts an appeal at that level. And their concerns include they would like to see the ferry traffic brought back to 2010 levels. So they're concerned about the level of traffic and also public access to the waterfront at the Steamship Authority, so for fishing and boating and a public walking path. So a conference has been set for October to determine, you know, whether the dispute can be resolved through mediation or whether it needs to go forward with this appeal process. And at this week's Steamship Authority Governor's meeting on Nantucket, the board discussed this issue in executive session. And then General Manager Wayne Lamson told us later that it's hard to say, you know, whether the appeal will delay the project. It's kind of unclear how long the process might take and whether, you know, it might be settled through mediation. And he did say that the project is designed to get a certain amount of the project done in each off season. So losing a month or two could throw off the schedule and increase the cost. So there's kind of that concern. And he also did say that, you know, traffic levels don't really fall within the DEP licensing process, and that public access, he said, is kind of a matter of practicality for them, that things like fishing and boating there would not really be compatible with the steamship's operations. So there is that hearing scheduled, and we'll be following that.
If they're not successful in that hearing or through the appeals process with the DEP, would the courts be another option?
It sounds like that it might be. I don't know whether that would preclude, you know, whether it could be that might be the next step. I'm not really sure.
Okay. And one other thing. So I believe the general manager, Wayne Lamson, is also planning to retire.
Mm-hmm.
So if this project is delayed, could it end up happening? His predecessor, the person who takes the job after him, have to deal with this?
Yeah, it definitely could be. If there is this delay and if that goes on past next June, it would be his predecessor, because he has announced that he's going to retire next summer, and the governors actually discussed that this week and have decided that the search for his replacement will be internal, and they're focusing on the existing ranks at the SSA, and they're pleased with the direction things are going there. So they're going to be interviewing current employees at the SSA, and if all goes according to plan, they have said they're going to have a public recommendation for the next general manager at the October board meeting, which is here on the Vineyard. So there could be, so it certainly sounds like no matter who takes over, they'll have a pretty good degree of familiarity, and we'll be able to, you know, if this does go on past Wayne Lamson's time at the SSA, that his replacement will be well equipped to deal with, to bring the project forward and also to deal with any other issues.
Yeah, that could be a big project for his successor, I suppose.
Absolutely.
Sarah Brown of the Martha's Vineyard Gazette, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye. Let's take a quick break. We're going to continue to talk about the top news stories of the week in this region. And Jeff Spillane is here from the Cape Cod Times. We'll be joined by Tim Wood of the Cape Cod Chronicle when we return. Welcome back to the local news roundup here on WCAI and The Point. I'm Sean Corcoran. Jeff Spillane from the Cape Cod Times is here. On the phone, Tim Wood of the Cape Cod Chronicle. Hello, Tim.
Hi, Sean.
I understand the Chatham Planning Board is taking a look at some senior housing in anticipation of zoning changes in town.
Indeed. The Planning Board is in the process of shaping a number of zoning changes for some village center areas that they've proposed but haven't implemented yet. And they're holding a series of sessions with various stakeholders in the community to get a better understanding of what people want to see in those areas. And one aspect of village centers is housing. And with 62% of the households in town here containing at least one senior citizen, housing for elderly people is a key concern. So last week, the board met with the Council on Aging, and they found that really there's not any sort of one-size-fits-all for senior housing. Senior COA officials pointed to a recent needs assessment they conducted that found that an overwhelming number of the town seniors want to remain living in town and wanted to continue in some form of independent living for as long as possible, which is totally understandable.
Sure.
Many also indicated a desire to downsize as well. The problem is that there's not a lot of options to accommodate both those desires. So one possibility that was raised is higher density housing in village centers on one floor that would accommodate independent living facilities. Now, there's not a lot of open land available for developments of that kind in the village center areas, so that may be a limited option. There was also interest in the idea of intergenerational house sharing, where seniors living in single-family homes would take in younger folks who would do chores and other duties around the house in exchange for an affordable rent. Now, this could be a way for some seniors to continue to live independently for a longer period of time in their own homes. And there are areas in town near village centers where this would work with dense single-family housing developments, but there's a lot of single-family housing that's sort of spread around town where this idea may not work as well. So this is something the planning board really wants to hash out, and they're going to continue to collect ideas and input on senior housing options. But they tell us that these zoning amendments, they're really looking long-term, and they're likely to result in some town meeting proposals probably about maybe a year or so from now.
Okay. Well, it sounds like they're being very creative. That's good. Chatham Planning Board taking a look at zoning changes for senior housing. Thank you, Tim Wood of the Cape Cod Chronicle.
Thanks, Sean.
Okay. Jeff Splane of the Cape Cod Times sitting next to me in our Woodhull studio. Jeff, kind of a gross story in the paper today. We'll try to, people may still be eating, but I doubt it. We'll try to keep it as clean as possible. Sewage backing up near the pools at the Cape Cod YMCA in West Barnstable.
That's true. And once again, we apologize if to the listeners if they are eating breakfast right now. There was a problem yesterday at the YMCA of Cape Cod. That's in West Barnstable. For those of you who aren't familiar with it, it's right across from Cape Cod Community College. There was a plumbing issue that caused some backed up and clogged drains, which led to sewage bubbling up through the drains in the locker rooms at the facility, which does have two pools, very active, very popular place. So at that time of the day, when we got a call about it, there was a lot of swimming lessons and the like for younger kids that were happening. Mm-hmm. The Board of Health was notified. They said that they did get over there as soon as possible. They did shut down the pools. They will be closed at least through, I'm guessing, midday today. The concern was that the people who are heading to the pool may have stepped in some of this waste, for lack of a better term.
That's a good one.
and brought it into the pool. And if that was the case, it certainly would have introduced bacteria into the pool. So the Board of Health did take some water samples, shut down the pools. They said it takes about 24 hours for the test to come back. And so we should expect those probably around midday today. In the meantime, the pool needs to be backwashed. That means taking out all of the water, filtering it, cleaning it, sanitizing it, et cetera. So we'll have a better idea today what's happening there. A plumber who was on site told the Board of Health that they believe that it may have been baby wipes that had caused the backup. There are some locker rooms that parents can take children into as well, and that may have been a cause of the backup. But nonetheless, they do need to get this test back, and it is dangerous. I mean, if there was that bacteria from the sewage and the waste, it could cause some pretty serious gastrointestinal issues.
Right. Okay, we'll continue to follow that story. Let's move to two court-related stories to talk about. One full of intrigue. A woman has been convicted of hiring or being part of a plot to kill her husband.
Right. This is right out of a Lifetime movie, Sean. This
yes.
is a woman named Tricia Leslie from Osterville. And back in 2013, she had hired a hitman, paid him $10,000 to kill her husband, claimed that her husband was abusing her and her children. Turns out the hitman who took the $10,000 did not follow through on what he was asked to do, said he gave his money to a friend who made the introduction, then spent the rest on drugs. Nonetheless, her husband was shot in 2013, but it was by her boyfriend at the time. So there were two cases going on here at once. She was found guilty of hiring the hitman to kill her husband and was sentenced to 3 to 5 years at MCI Framingham. The other case she was acquitted on the other case of working with her boyfriend to hire the hitman. And the charges there were armed assault and assault and battery with a dangerous weapon. And, of course, this all took place over in Osterville, a quiet little hamlet where you wouldn't expect this to happen.
And the husband testified, or at least did a victim witness
statement. He was there and was ready to testify, but he was not called.
Okay. And he'd been shot, I think, what, 3 times in that?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. And then this other case, two people convicted of a murder also this week.
Yeah, that's right. And this one is not over by a long shot. This is a 2012 murder of a gentleman called Andrew Stanley in Hyannis, who was found tied up and murdered. Two men this week were found guilty of first-degree murder, armed robbery, and firearms, possessing firearms without an ID. They were Stephen Webster of Dorchester and Eddie Mack of Roxbury. They did get life without parole. I understand that it was fairly emotional in the courtroom. The grandmother who raised Andrew Stanley was in the courtroom, gave a victim impact statement, was quite sad. And on his way out, Webster, who was found guilty and sent to life in prison, made a comment saying that he got nailed by an all-white jury, which in fact really wasn't the truth because there was one African-American on the jury. And his attorney did make a statement that this would not have happened if it were tried in Boston. So in Massachusetts, you do get an automatic appeal when you are convicted of first-degree murder. So we're going to be hearing more about this.
Okay. Let's go to the phone where Ed Miller is joining us, Ed of the Provincetown Banner. Ed, are you there?
Yes, I am. Okay. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning to you as well. So some long-anticipated affordable housing or mixed-use housing, is it mixed-use or is it just affordable and also mid-income?
It's mixed. It's called Stable Path, and it's been in the works for about 13 years. And there was a celebration week with the ribbon cutting. There's a total of 23 units. 18 of them are affordable, and the other 5 are listed as median or middle income. So it is mixed income, but primarily affordable.
Okay.
And as you know, the need for affordable housing out here on the Outer Cape and all over the Cape is extreme. So this is a great event for the town of Provincetown. A lot of people worked very hard on it.
And where is it?
It's off of Race Point Road. So towards the province lands and the Provincetown Airport. Near the National Seashore, it's the site of a former horse farm, Nelson's Riding Stable, which was, I think, the total property was about 5 acres, the former owner of it was really intent on instead of just selling the land for development of whatever, wanting it, at least part of it, to become affordable housing. And an organization here in town called Community Housing Resource and its director, Ted Malone, were able to purchase 2.25 acres. So that area now holds 10 buildings with a total of 23 units. It was designed with an eye towards really preserving the natural landscape, where there were a number of large oak trees that they went out of their way to preserve in order to keep the place looking as natural as possible.
Nice.
Did a pretty good job.
And how do people get into these homes?
Well, there's an affordable housing lottery. There's so many more people who need affordable housing than the number of units available, that when units come on the market, the local housing authority will run a lottery, and if you're one of the lucky ones, you get to move in. The this particular development, Stable Path, has, I think it's five studio units or efficiency units, and then the others are a mix of one, two, and three-bedroom units. So it's really designed to accommodate both single people and families. And if I can just add a personal editorial note, you know, every week you introduce this segment by talking about some of the area's leading journalists. Very generously of you to do that, but I would point out that journalists make very little money, along with a number of other professions that are very important to these communities. And we right here at the Banner, our own staff faces issues of finding housing, mm-hmm. as I'm sure people who work at other newspapers. It makes me really worry about the future of newspapers on Cape Cod.
I couldn't agree more. How do you attract, not just in newspapers, but how do you attract people with credentials if you can't pay them anything close to what they could get someplace off of the peninsula, off of the island?
Yeah. Well, it's something that I think people in Provincetown are aware of. This Stable Path is an example of great persistence in getting this development done, and same kinds of things needs to happen much more.
Absolutely. Good point. And let's talk about the Plymouth 400. Of course, Plymouth has taken the lead on marking the anniversary of the Mayflower's arrival in the New World. And for a while, it sounded like Provincetown was being forgotten, even though really that was where they first stopped.
Well, yes, this has been an issue that has gone on for more than 100 years, where an awful lot of people think that the Pilgrims first set foot on land here in the New World in Plymouth, when in fact it was in Provincetown on Saturday, November 11th, 1620. And what happened here just last week was there was a meeting of the minds between the Provincetown and the Plymouth organizers of the upcoming 400th anniversary. Members of the Plymouth 400 organization came here, and there was a very cordial meeting where the Plymouth folks toured Provincetown Harbor. They went to the Pilgrim Landing Park over in the West End, and looked at the province lands and a number of other locations. And everybody was very enthusiastic about having the two towns really work together. Obviously, the center of the celebration will be in Plymouth, but the point is to make sure that Provincetown's role in that whole story is not forgotten and is celebrated.
In your headline that you sent to me, you called it a détente. I thought that was very appropriate.
Yes. Well, one of the things that Provincetown selectman Cheryl Andrews pointed out after the meeting was that she was impressed that there was a what she called a heartfelt dedication to an honest discussion of the relationship between the English settlers and the native tribes. And, of course, that's an issue that sometimes, you know, causes pain among people who point out that the Native Americans here were not always treated well, and that story needs to be told.
Absolutely. Ed Miller of the Provincetown Banner joins us each week, or one of his colleagues, to talk about what's happening in Provincetown and the area surrounding it. Thank you, Ed. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Sean. Take care.
You too, sir. We're going to take a quick break. Jeff Splane is going to stay here. Jeff is with the Cape Cod Times. More stories to talk about there. Nelson Siegelman will join us as well from the Martha's Vineyard Times. And welcome back to the Local News Roundup here on WCAI. I'm Sean Corcoran. With me in the studio, Jeff Spillane of the Cape Cod Times. Let's go back to the phone where Nelson Siegelman is joining us from the Martha's Vineyard Times newsroom. Good morning, Nelson.
Good morning.
Nelson, it looks like they're going to get back at dredging where are we talking about here, Menemsha Channel?
Yes, Menemsha Channel, the entrance to Menemsha Pond, which is shared by the towns of Aquinna and Chilmark and also the Wampanoag tribe. This has been a long-awaited project. It's had sort of starts and stops over the past 3 years due to funding issues and then mobilization issues. But last year, J-Way dredging began the job. They got a late start because of a storm that hindered their dredge getting up here. And then they ran into some equipment problems. The end result was that they didn't finish when they were supposed to finish, and they were forced to stop because of winter flounder spawning. And the head of J-Way was a bit upset with that because he felt he was close to finishing. At any rate, he left all his equipment there thinking he could just begin again in the fall, but the town and the tribe was quite upset with that. They wanted his equipment out of there because of the busy summer months. He was eventually forced to remove everything, and there was some talk of a lawsuit, but in the end result, the Army Corps of Engineers decided that rather than sue him and get involved in a long battle, they would just rehire J-Way. So J-Way is coming back. They know the area. They're going to bring all the equipment back and hopefully this time get the job done. But once it's finished, it will open up that channel, and supporters of the project say the increased water flow will help circulation and ultimately be healthy for the pond. And also an important point is the federal government designates it as a channel of sort of refuge in the event of inclement weather. Boats can go in there and seek shelter. So that's really what's at the bottom of all of this.
Okay. And another story, there's a pretty recognizable building on Circuit Avenue that looks like it might be demolished and make way for some mixed-use housing.
Well, that's the plan. Phillips, the owners of Phillips Hardware on Circuit Avenue in Oak Bluffs, visitors to the island know that Circuit Avenue in the summer is quite a lively place, and it's been a lively place for centuries. We have an old photo up from the about the late 1800s that shows a throng of people on the avenue. But what they want to do is demolish the existing building and build a three-story building with 8 apartments on top. And this really just fits in with the notion that housing should be where there's already existing density. So by putting 8 apartments on top, you're really adding to the availability of the island's rental stock. But obviously, this is a big project to take down a building like that and put it up. And also, there are some zoning issues. In some respects, the current zoning bylaws don't allow for 8 year-round apartments like that. It's just so they have to look at going to town meeting and getting that changed. But hopefully this is all going to go forward because the island needs this type of housing.
And so this was the first public hearing, so it could be quite a – we've seen these things drag on for quite some time.
Oh, yeah, they can certainly drag on. But I would expect that this will go pretty smoothly just because, again, it's in a busy part of downtown. This is in keeping with historical tradition there, these large buildings with living quarters on top. But Martha's Vineyard, it's winter. You never know. People have more time to fight over things, so we'll see.
All right, Nelson Siegelman of the Martha's Vineyard Times. Thank you, Nelson.
You're welcome.
Okay, Jeff Spillane here from the Cape Cod Times. Jeff, let's talk about Pilgrim Nuclear Power Station, one of the lowest-ranked nuclear reactors in the country in terms of safety. We've seen it being shut off and turned back on several times over the past year because of mechanical problems. The plant's been looked at pretty closely mm-hmm. by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Now it looks like the NRC is going to come in and really look top to bottom at this thing.
Yes, they are. And as you had mentioned, Pilgrim was ranked as one of the three worst performers in the United States last year. And because of that ranking, that is why they are getting so much scrutiny and more inspections than other plants. There is a very major and important inspection coming up in November in Plymouth, right around Thanksgiving week, as November 28th, when a lot of people are in town. But there are going to be 20 experts from all over the country from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission coming in for a very comprehensive inspection of the plant. This will be an inspection of the staff, the procedure, and the equipment there at the plant. When it was ranked in the bottom, it was one step above mandatory shutdown. If this particular inspection does not turn out to be adequate, if it's not good for the plant, it could result in more inspections or could even call for an order of a shutdown of the plant earlier than what's planned now, which is mid-2019. So this is a very, very crucial and important inspection for Pilgrim. Typically, nuclear power plants are inspected quarterly on a quarterly basis. That is still happening, but these three additional inspections this year were a result of its performance. There's been water leaks. There have been issues with air conditioning and ventilation. And one particular inspection, it showed that if the air conditioning went out in the control room, mm-hmm. which is crucial for the employees to be there, obviously, the temperature would go up to 114 degrees in that room. So a lot of problems and a lot of very problems there, maintenance issue, breakdown of pumps. So a spokesman for Entergy, which owns the plant, which, by the way, the bottom three performers, nuclear plants in the country last year, all owned by the same company. Said that they've been online more than 94% this year, and they hope that the inspection goes well and they can get back on the standard inspection schedule.
Well, one of the sad ironies was that Entergy got to decide when they told the NRC they were ready for the inspection. They tell the NRC we're ready for the inspection. Next thing you know, they have to have an emergency shutdown
for 2 weeks.
Yes,
it was days after that. Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll have to see what happens with that. Moving on, a spot of good news for fans of the performing arts. Long time, ever since I moved to the Cape, they've been talking about having a world-class performing arts center somewhere on Cape Cod. Looks like they might have a site.
It does, and that's right. This has been something that's been going on. I look back into some of our archives for about 25 years now. But an organization called the Oceanside Performing Arts Center announced this week that they did sign a purchase and sale agreement for a 40-acre parcel of land in Hyannis that currently is the location of the Twin Brooks Golf Course. That's the golf course that is behind the Hyannis Resort and Conference Center, right at the West End Rotary. Now, the plan here is to have a performing arts center. Margaret Van Sciver, who is the head of the board of directors of this organization, said it's much too early to talk about the building itself, the capacity that the Performing Arts Center may have, or even a design. This was the first thing they wanted to get accomplished. The Cape Symphony has already agreed to make it their permanent home. And she did say that in addition to having an indoor concert hall, there would be an outdoor facility for concert goers. She also said on dates when the symphony would not be performing there, the Performing Arts Center would host well-known pop, country, and comedy acts, which is great.
Sounds
a little bit like the Melody Tent right across the street, doesn't it?
Yeah, and when you guys called the Melody Tent, they didn't know anything about it.
They did not. And in speaking with Margaret Van Sciver, she says, oh, we have a great relationship with them. They'll continue to do their summer thing. It's an intimate setting. And, the symphony performs there. And in calling South Shore Playhouse Associates at Cohasset, which owns the Melody Tent, they weren't aware of it. That would be interesting to follow up. We do have a follow-up story coming up in the next few days as to what some of the other performing arts centers, venues are thinking about this. It did catch a lot of people by surprise. But as you mentioned, for about 25 years now, there has been an effort afoot here on the Cape to have a state-of-the-art performing arts center. Initially, it was supposed to be a Mashpee, and it was the family of Ernie Bach.
That's right. And the Cape for so long was known for its live music. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my parents' generation always talked about coming to the Cape, and it would be nice to have a renaissance of live performance.
It would be. It would be great. It'd be great.
Let's move on to kind of a confusing story. Let's talk about wastewater again. So there was some reporting about a potential kind of test using wastewater from Barnstable, and then now we're hearing from Barnstable saying, hey, hold on a second, that's not a done deal. Walk us through this.
Yeah, sure. You know, there's been a lot of talk lately about what we call the blue economy here on the Cape, and as possibly being a real driver of economic development here. And one of the companies that's commonly cited with this blue economy is called Aquagen Infrastructure Systems. It's based in West Yarmouth. It's a startup company, and they have a technology where they would treat wastewater by passing it through algae-filled tubes. You know, as you know, algae consumes nutrients, whether it be nitrogen, et cetera. It would do that in the tube and clean the water. Well, apparently, one of the investors from an R&D foundation came to visit the company last week. They have provided the company with $1 million to get a pilot program up and running. Came to check on the project and asked why the pilot was taking so long. The founder of the company, a man named Brian Braganton Smith, told him and one of our reporters, Christine Legere, it was because an agreement with the town of Barnstable was taking too long. Barnstable is going to provide the effluent, the wastewater, to test this product. But there was going to be about 600 gallons of this effluent trucked from Barnstable to their facility in West Yarmouth on a daily basis to get the test up and running. Sounded great. Problem was, it was not true. And the next day, Dan Santos, a DPW director at Barnstable, said, hey, this isn't happening yet. First of all, we were not happy with the plan. He said it wouldn't be very hard to do this, but you'd also need DEP approval to be moving wastewater around. So it was a little bit premature from what all indications are, and not sure whether or not that this was said just to please the investor or not.
Wow. Now, when they talk about the blue economy, can you just explain that, what they mean?
Yeah, the blue economy would be taking advantage of our location and some of our expertise here that we have on the Cape, whether it be here in Woods Hole or other places, to work on wastewater technology solutions.
Right. That would be a good example of it.
Yeah. Like biotech in Kendall Square.
Right. A very disturbing story with an interesting twist to it because it were relatives involved. We don't do a lot of these types of stories, but I thought we should talk about this one involving a home invasion.
Yeah, something that you really don't hear a lot about here and in Centerville. This happened a week ago today. It was kept fairly quiet. There was one woman and two men. They are currently all being held without bail pending a dangerous hearing coming up next week. But the woman involved had convinced two of her friends or associates, whatever you like to call them. They're all in their 20s, by the way.
Yeah.
To go into a relative, still not sure if it's a...
Her relative, uncle, right?
Her relative. Go into this condominium in Centerville, and they assaulted this man who was sleeping at the time. Luckily, he was able to dial 911, let the emergency responders know that he was attacked. He was attacked with a crowbar. Hmm. And it sounds like the beating was horrible. It was intense. He was taken to Cape Cod Hospital and transferred fairly quickly to Mass General. He's already had two brain surgeries, is currently in critical condition. Not sure as of right now what the motive was, although with the woman, Alexa Fencher, she's 21 years old, West Yarmouth, this is the relative, she did have a restraining order against her from a court in central Massachusetts in Uxbridge of not to be near this relative. So there was some type of
history there.
Problem and a history going on with this family. And one of the gentlemen who was involved in this, who I guess did have the crow, he was the one with the crowbar and actually carried this out, he did confess to the crime.
Yeah, of course, this is all alleged, but I understand. Yeah, it was one of the assailants, and there was a pretty moving picture of him in court, just very, very upset, clearly
weeping.
It seems remorseful for this horrible act. I mean, if you read about the injuries, it was really terrible. But perhaps he found his conscience and at least confessed and saved the police a heck of a lot of time.
Let's hope. And we'll find out next week with the dangerous hearing if these three are going to be held until they're tried.
What do you mean when you said that they kept it kind of quiet? We hadn't heard much about it.
It happened a week ago today.
Right.
And I was not the reporter that was covering it, but one of the days we did have some information that there was a beating, but I believe there was an investigation going on.
Oh, so it's harder to get the information.
Right, right.
I see. And the story we've all been waiting for.
yes, we have.
The Mama Manatee.
Yeah, this is going to be one of the top 10 stories of the year. It has to be. It's a feel-good story, and we love it. There has been a manatee, as a lot of you already know, that has been hanging around our waters, Nantucket Sound, since August. And a week ago today, she was found safe and sound by Washburn Island here in Falmouth. And at the time, she was called a he.
That's right.
a 1,200-pound manatee. The folks from the International Fund for Animal Welfare, IFAW, were able to stabilize her, get her out of the water, and eventually move her to Mystic Aquarium in Connecticut. And much to everyone's surprise, he turned out to be a she. So Washburn is a girl manatee. And during the course of the examination of Washburn, there was an ultrasound conducted, and it turns out she's 4 to 5 months pregnant, which was brought a lot of smiles to people in the newsroom when we heard that. And also raised the question, well, is there a boy manatee out there somewhere in Nantucket Sound that might be the father? And but if you take a look at the biology of manatees, they actually are pregnant for a year.
Oh.
So she still has a way to go. It's likely that the father is still down in the warmer waters off Florida. But nonetheless, with her being pregnant, this now does add a sense of urgency to get her back to her natural habitat, to the warm waters down south. And the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, which does oversee manatees, is hoping to get her back to either the Miami or Orlando area within the next 2 weeks.
And how are they going to get her there? Are they going to truck her or fly her? Any idea?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I'm going to say that they're probably going to truck her.
Yeah. Okay. You're not sure.
I'm not sure. I would guess that's how they're going to do it.
I think that's what they tried before with the other manatee several years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought I'd heard they might be flying her, but
well,
I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah. Well, of course, we're going to be following this story fairly closely.
I'm sure you would.
And one thing, too, that they've mentioned at Mystic Aquarium, that they do want to do this quite carefully because they don't want to add unnecessary stress to Mama Manatee.
Right.
So,
and the name now Washburn. There was another name that was being floated around, but they've decided upon Washburn. I kind of like it, though it's not too mama like. But
it's not. But that's Washburn okay. Island.
That's
and,
right.
That
makes sense.
Yeah, there were some other names that were given to the manatee over the course of the summer, wherever she was found. So
that's fun. Jeff Spillane of the Cape Cod Times, thank you for coming in.
Oh, you're welcome.
Okay, and thank you very much to Sarah Brown of the Martha's Vineyard Gazette, Tim Wood of the Cape Cod Chronicle, Ed Miller of the Provincetown Banner, Nelson Siegelman of the Martha's Vineyard Times. Your local journalists are working hard to bring you the news and information from your community. I hope you support them, and thank you for listening.
The Friday News Roundup is produced by Sean Corcoran. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.